your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Robin. Welcome to a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Tuesday night, November 25th, 2025. As we bring you this new episode, on this show, we are joined by another best friend, and Dan Zaborski of Fangraphs.com. In our last episode, MLB.com's Jim Callis gave us an update on the top White Sox prospects. Dan is going to share the 2026 Zips projections, which you can check out on Fangraphs.com. I'll ask Dan where Zips sees the biggest improvement for the White Sox, what metric to track to see if Colson Montgomery is ready to make another development leap, and what is the weakest position group for the White Sox that really needs to be addressed this offseason. Later in the show, I'll be joined by Jim Margulis and James Fegan as the White Sox find their first base coach. Is it too soon to be hyping up Sam Antonacci? And with Thanksgiving rapidly approaching, we share what we are thankful for. The Chicago White Sox 2026 Zips projections are out on Fangraphs.com. A reminder, podcast listeners, and for those that read them on Fangraphs or read Jim Margulis' reaction to them on SoxMachine.com, it's 1,000 simulations for the upcoming season, and what's posted is the 50th percentile projection, meaning that there are some seasons where a player falls under what's initially posted, and there are some seasons where players absolutely crush their projections. And again, 2025 was a season of two halves for the White Sox, but really a pre and post All-Star break performance. We are all hoping that the post All-Star break performance for the White Sox sticks around. And joining me to discuss the Zips projections is one of our best friends of the show from Fangraphs.com. It's Dan Zaborski. And hello, Dan. Thanks for coming back on the Sox Machine Podcast.
Always fun. Thanks for having me on. I should clarify that there are a million simulations, not just 1,000.
Okay.
We have the power of modern microprocessors.
We are recording this a couple days before Thanksgiving. And in our previous episode, I had to ask Jim Callis about his golden retrievers and how he keeps them away from the Thanksgiving food. For your cats, do you do anything special for them on Thanksgiving?
No, I had one cat, Galileo, who I had for, he lived to be 20. That was the cat that liked Thanksgiving. We always do a couple different turkey things, and I always make a small one in the rotisserie. And Galileo used to pace back and forth in front of the rotisserie, watching the turkey turn. And the rule was he always got the first piece of turkey, and he got a little plate with turkey, and he liked mashed potatoes, and he liked peas. I'm trying to remember what else we gave him. I think that was all he had, but he enjoyed that. None of my other cats have been as food motivated as Galileo, who was a gourmand for a cat. I mean, he had venison and elk and lobster. He had lots of interesting things.
Well, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. And it's not great for the White Sox or the 2026 Zips projections, but also not terrible, question mark. When you ran the Zips projections for the White Sox, as the team is currently constructed, and that is the key phrase, because again, it is November 25th as we are recording this. What areas of the rebuilding White Sox team, Dan, does Zips look at and say, these are the areas that they are improving at?
Well, you look kind of at the skill positions. There's a lot more reason to like Colson Montgomery. I mean, he was still very up and down, but there was a lot of really good ups, so you could feel better about him. They're better at second. They have options at catcher. Louis Robert isn't done by any stretch of the imagination, even if his value has come down considerably. That up the middle looks pretty solid. And there are some interesting starting pitchers. Especially when you talk at the front of the rotation, one Mr. Shane Smith, who really looks like a legitimate number two starter, who they can actually have in the rotation for the next 5 years. So I think the White Sox are not a good team right now, and they're probably not going to be a good team. I can't imagine the the order of events that'll have to happen this season, off season, to make them a good team. But they're a normal lousy team now. They're not necessarily the team that, when you have to make a joke about a bad team, you instantly have to say White Sox. I think the Rockies are kind of in that position right now, back in their familiar position. But the White Sox probably aren't noticeably worse than the Nationals or the Angels. They're just a normal lousy team, which means, you know, with a little luck, they could, you know, they could go 500, because there's a lot of uncertainty in baseball. That's not the way to bet, so please don't bet that unless you get amazing odds. But I mean, there are things to like about this team more than last year and the year before.
Well, that's great. That's progress.
It is progress.
Let's start with Kyle Teal and Colson Montgomery. Zips is thinking that both Teal and Montgomery will be the White Sox two best position players in 2026. I also enjoy, if you go on Fangraphs.com podcast listeners, Dan does post the 80th and 20th percentile projections for all the players as well. It gives a good insight of what a player's potential ceiling and potential floor is. And while the 50th percentile projection for on Zips for Teal and Montgomery are two WAR players, the 80th percentile has them both at 3.7 WAR. Starting with Teal, you wrote in Fangraphs that he should be given as much opportunity as possible to claim the main catching spot. But Edgar Caro's still around as we record this, Dan. Would you be against a 50-50 plane split between Teal and Caro at the catching position in 2026?
Not so much, because they're still in fact-finding mode, but I don't want them to get in a position where they say, you know what, Teal's just going to be a DH, and then he gets like eight starts a year at catcher or something. I think it is important to see what you have in both these players. And if Teal doesn't, you know, if they decide a year or two from now that the contending White Sox probably need a better defensive catcher than Teal, then you make that move. But I don't think there's any reason to move a player off a position until you have to, especially for a team like this, which the bottom line wins simply aren't super important. They're not going to put that in a press release. 2026 wins, not important, but in reality, they aren't that important compared to, you know, 2027, 2028, 2029, and so on.
Now, with Montgomery in 71 games last year on Fangraphs, Montgomery was worth 2.7 WAR. Do you have any idea where he fell as far as that final total in his 2025 projection, Stan? Was that like the 99th percentile for Colson Montgomery last year?
In the plate appearances that Zips projected, 2.7 WAR, or we're doing 2.7, right? Yeah, 2.7 WAR would have been about the 87th percentile. But if I, let me see how many plate appearances he got. He got, well, it's actually going to be higher, because I'm including, he only got 284 plate appearances in the majors. Actually, it would be pretty, let's just say it'd be very high considering it was half a season, since he played essentially on a 5.4 WAR pace.
Now, for 2026, some White Sox fans would push back and say, hey, he was worth 2.7 WAR last year. Why is he hovering around a two WAR projection going in 2026? And is the strikeout rate, or maybe even contact rate, for Colson Montgomery, is that the concern for Zips?
It is a concern. His contact rate was under 70%. That's Javier Baez territory. And he did a lot when he hit the ball. But the fact remains is that when you have a player who splits the time between the minors and the majors, the minor league performance translated doesn't get suddenly get less predictive. And he did not, he hit very, very poorly in the minors last year. So that has to be, it is a balancing act. I mean, he had a 129 WRC plus in the majors, a 78 in, combined in the minors. He just didn't hit minor league pitching very well. And so we either have to say we don't count half a season from the season before, which makes projections worse, because the second half of the previous season is a really terrible projection system. So you had to balance that he was lousy in the minors. He was really, really good in the majors. And the truth is likely somewhere in the middle.
When it comes to contact rate, what is the percentile that White Sox fans should be paying attention to for Colson Montgomery to give him more confidence that he can be a star shortstop for the White Sox?
I think, I mean, he doesn't need to be like David Fletcher or Tony Gwynn or Luis Arraez to be a star if he hits for this amount of power. But you would like to see contact rates at least like in the 75% range. You don't want it to be so all or nothing, because even when things are going well, I mean, he had a 311 on base percentage. If suddenly he's making more contact, and maybe the batting average of balls in play goes up a little bit, more line drives, then I think you do have a guy who, if he can hit 250, 260, all of a sudden that on-base percentage looks a lot better, and it really pumps him up quite a bit. I think that he does have that path to being a star, but there's just a lot of uncertainties right now.
Also hoping to carry over in 2026 from his excellent performance in 2025. You mentioned him before, Shane Smith. Zip still like Shane Smith. Outside of Shane Smith, though, when it comes to starting pitching for the White Sox, is there any other pitchers that Zips likes for the starting staff?
Likes, not particularly. Okay. It thinks a lot of these guys are pretty good stopgaps. The pitchers who are more interesting have had some struggles. When you look at last year, Noah Schultz did have some struggles. You still have to like his upside, but you don't necessarily see that upside coming in 2026, because the old baseball prospectus joke is there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. I think his knee is okay. It didn't require surgery. So I'd be optimistic, but just not necessarily 2026. I think the White Sox are just in that stage where they're just going to have to sort out, because they have a lot of these guys who are kind of decent fourth starter-ish types. And if you can just get one or two of them to break out a bit, to say go Andrew Abbott or something, not necessarily be Garrett Crochet, then all of a sudden the rotation starts to look like it has some heft to it. If, you know, Schultz works out or Smith works out. I don't want to sound unredeemably bleak here. It's just not going to be good this year, probably.
Got it. So it's Shane Smith, who has a ceiling of a number two starter and a bunch.
I think he is a number two starter now. I'm not really sure he can become a true ace type.
Right.
I just can't see him going into the season with projections for, like, you know, ERA pluses of 125, 130, where you kind of see like the ace category, that nebulous category kind of gel around. But I think he's a really good pitcher. And it's interesting. It'll be an interesting test of Zips versus Steamer, because Zips likes Smith a lot more than Steamer does.
Okay. Yeah, because with Schultz and Hagen Smith, it just seems like, because of Jerry Reinsdorf's spending habits, if the White Sox are going to have another all-star caliber starting pitcher outside of Shane Smith, someone who pitches as well as like Chris Sale and Garrett Crochet have for other teams, especially with Boston in past years, that it's going to come from within, that it's going to come from Schultz or it's going to come from Hagen Smith. So maybe not this year, but I do think that we're going to see Schultz and Smith make starts in the major leagues, Dan. Is there anything particular for White Sox fans listening to this podcast that both Schultz and Hagen Smith need to display in the major leagues to maybe you or even Zips have more confidence that, yes, these guys can be the frontline starting pitchers that the White Sox are hoping for?
Well, I think you do need to look at their command. Schultz did have problems this year. Some people speculated it was because he was switching to the major league baseballs in AAA, but he struggled in AA too, especially compared to last year. His walk rate doubled. When you look at him, someone can quibble with this, but I still think that he's a fastball slider guy and the other stuff is kind of in the works, so to speak, change up cutter. You a lot of times when you see pitchers have a spike in walk rate in the minors, it's not necessarily that there's a control issue. It's that sometimes as you face more experienced hitters, you start to run out of weapons in an at-bat, and the longer it drags out, you can't just throw the fastball slider nonstop unless you are crazy good with it. So I think you need to look at that command first more than anything. If they allow some home runs or something, I wouldn't worry about that. Home runs are a weird stat and people can get too obsessed with that, but you do need to see that command come around.
Now for the bullpen, last year, Zips rejected a negative 1.6 collective WAR for the White Sox bullpen. And surprisingly, the White Sox bullpen, according to Fangraphs, as a unit, finished with 4 WAR. So they exceeded the Zips projections, even though...
Oh, yeah.
We know podcast listeners, and we talked about this. This is an area that the White Sox have an opportunity to improve upon. I think a big reason why the White Sox did so well in the WAR category out of the bullpen is that they threw so many innings. Now, Zips is projected a much rosier projection in 2026 compared to 2025. Zips is projecting a 2.6 WAR bullpen for the White Sox as currently constructed before they make any additions. How much of that WAR, though, is on the right shoulder of Grant Taylor? Because I feel like Taylor's doing a lot of the heavy lifting for any type of positive projections for the White Sox bullpen, Dan.
Yeah, Zips likes Taylor a lot. Zips likes Taylor either as a reliever or used as a starter, which I think the team should be exploring long term. I don't think they're going to do that in 2026, if I recall correctly.
Right.
They've talked about having him like do some long stints, like 2-3 innings, I think. I don't remember the exact quote. Hopefully I'm not making this up out of the blue. That's
no,
also
you're not. We had Chris Getz say that. 2-3 innings.
Oh, good.
Max.
Okay.
Yeah.
I hate when that happens. When I remember things that aren't true, the older I get, the more times that happens, I remember something that never happened. But no, Taylor is really good. They do have a good front 3 or 4 relievers. The back of the bullpen kind of gets a little scary. But the thing is, a rebuilding team's bullpen is really the least important thing to worry about. That's kind of a later problem. That's a problem for future Chris Getz to worry about.
Got it. So let's talk about the messes that Chris Getz and the White Sox front office have to address. But this is why I appreciate the timing. And you did us a huge favor, Dan, for posting the White Sox.
It was
Sox
a random number generator.
Sure.
It was the power of randomness, or pseudo-random, as it's officially.
Because we are recording this and having this conversation prior to the winter meetings, it aids us to know it really highlights the areas that the White Sox need to find improvements for, as the current 40-man rosters record this is only 34 players. And the Zips rejections, again, does shine a light in where the White Sox need to improve upon. I think the biggest area looking at the Zips rejections is the outfield, Dan. I am still rooting for Luis Robert to be good for the White Sox, but we have to all be honest with ourselves. To count on Luis Robert to play more than 130 games may feel like a foolish task, just because it's so many lower half injuries over the years. I am concerned that another hamstring pull by Luis Robert or groin tightness could take him out for a month, and then he's playing 110, 120 games max. Chris Getz has already said that Andrew Benintendi has to spend more time at DH in 2026 because the Achilles injuries that he's been suffering the last couple of years really impact his ability to play in left field as far as his range. So the two highest paid players are dealing with nagging injuries that will limit how much time they play in the outfield. That means the White Sox signed Derek Hill, and you got Brooks Baldwin and Everson Pereira. Like, that is your White Sox outfield right now. So what does Zips like about the White Sox outfield? But maybe more importantly, what does Zips not like about the White Sox outfield?
Well, I mean, it likes Robert if he's healthy. And that, of course, is a very big if. Our depth charts currently give him 560 plate appearances. When I run the season simulations, yeah, but I'm not gonna predict that as the median outcome. There's no way I'm predicting 560 as the when I run the simulations in spring training. 560 is a pretty big ask as a over under number, in my opinion. But Dan is not the dictator of the playing time on our depth charts. I think what the rest of the outfield looks like, it's like, I mean, since we have a lot of Chicago people, you have experience, and I do too, of being snowed in at home, and you need stuff from the grocery store, but you have to dig out your driveway if you're going to go to the grocery store.
Right.
So you look through your fridge and your pantry, and you start putting things, random things together because they're food. like, oh, here's an old ramen. I don't know when this expired. And there's some some peanut butter and soy sauce in the fridge. Oh, there's some pickles. Yeah, and then you have kind of a meal, sort of. And that's what the White Sox have. The outfield after Robert is whatever just happens to be on their roster that isn't that no what people who aren't playing anywhere else that day. It's just whatever, because we have to give a lineup card to the umpire. What is the consequence if you refuse to give a lineup card to an umpire? What
I
is the
don't
official
know.
MLB rule? Does that count as a forfeit if you don't give him a lineup card?
I don't know. I'm gonna have to look that up. Podcast listeners, hit us up in the comments if you know what the official rule is, because I don't know off the
Yeah,
top of
I
my
don't.
head.
Do you know what the rule should be, though?
What should
They
it be?
should give the lineup card to the umpire, but the lineups should not be announced publicly in any way. It should, and you should have like the WWE entrances the first time through the order.
Yeah, you know who hates that? Gamblers.
Well, that's even
Fantasy.
better.
Fantasy baseball players.
Because I want, like, it's the second batter. The music hits. Oh my God, Mean Gene, that's Curtis Meade's music. My God.
Right, so the outfield, not good for the White Sox. I know you
No.
still keep tabs of the Baltimore Orioles. Part of my off-season plan project, Dan, I suggested that the White Sox should approach Cedric Mullins, who needs an opportunity to bounce back. And obviously, the White Sox have plenty of playing time, and they could also use someone that they could count on to play some center field if Robert does get hurt. Do you like that idea that the White Sox approach someone like Cedric Mullins?
It's not a bad idea at all. I think you can put he tends he's usually pretty healthy, at least healthier than Robert. He can still hang it in center field. Depends on how much he wants. That's always going to be the stumbling block. Because I mean, he had that hot start last year, and he was just for most of the season after that was pretty lousy. I mean, he was downright terrible with the Mets. But again, whole season is more important than little chunks of the season, as we talked about with Colson Montgomery. The question always is, what are you doing instead of Mullins? Or Mullins instead of who or what? Because the White Sox don't necessarily have to say we're either going to go with Mullins or we're stuck going with like Baldwin and friends. I do think that they should be opportunistic in this offseason. Look for guys who have some upside, who are out there. They might be minor league free agents, guys coming off injury, pillow contracts. Go for that high payout. Yeah, I think you could flip Mullins if you can get him on a 1-year deal, but I'm not really sure that is the best thing to do. It's a fine thing to do simply because he's, let's be honest, he's not really blocking anyone in Chicago. But I think they want to find guys who he would block, if that makes sense.
Got it. So you don't like my other idea as well of Mike Yastrzemski taking over right field for the White Sox.
I mean, it won't make the team noticeably worse, and they're not good blocking anyone, but it doesn't feel like this is the, I mean, if this was a team that would look like they were going to win 85 games
Yeah.
and the corner outfield stunk, then you really start talking about Yastrzemski and Mullins, and maybe a DH option for if you don't want to trust Benintendi. But I'm not really sure that really helps them win in the future. I think the general approach that a rebuilding team should take, or really any team, is to every move they should be able to ask themselves, what realistically does this do to cause us win to win more games now? Or what realistically does this do to cause us to win more games in the future? And if you can't answer either of those convincingly to yourself, then you seriously have to question any move or transaction.
Now, one surprise with the Zips rejections, Zips loves Sam Antonacci. And in our previous episode, I asked Jim Callis what he thought of Antonacci, who had a good Arizona Fall League, and if he was a left-handed version of Chase Mydroth, and if Antonacci could compete with Mydroth for playing time in 2026. Callis thinks Antonacci could and would actually prefer him over Mydroth because Antonacci bats left-handed. Dan, why is Zip such a big fan of Sam Antonacci? And should the White Sox consider Antonacci part of their plans maybe as soon as opening day?
Well, I mean, he doesn't just draw walks. He's a good contact hitter, and his bat isn't terrible. He didn't slug a lot, but he's not one of those weird guys in the low minors who has like a 380 on base percentage and like a 290 slugging, which you sometimes see. That's a little bit of exaggeration, but he's still young enough that there is still some upside. He's not like 5'3", 140 or anything. He's not a big dude, but he's not a little guy either. So I think there is, you know, some projectability in his bat. Will he hit for 30 home runs? Probably not, but he does have some speed. I think he's interesting. I think you do want to see how he fares in the upper minors with more time. I mean, he was fine in Double A. He wasn't super young for the level. You'd like to see how he does in Triple A, but I think the White Sox, if he continues to, you know, draw walks, make good contact, steal some bases, if he continues to do that in Triple A, then you have to seriously start thinking about your second base, shortstop, third base configuration. He has played quite a bit of third base. So you could theoretically get Madroff and Antonacci in the infield. You do have Miguel Vargas, but I don't think Miguel Vargas is a long-term fit at third base. I think the question is what his power upside is, to that he's sufficient to be a, you know, a first base DH type. But I mean, it's a wait and see thing, I think, for him.
We did get this fan question from Zach Ferguson, who just joined our veterans committee. So Zach, thank you so much for doing that. And Zach is asking, is there any one lineup forecasted by the Zips model that vastly outperforms the others, or is the variation among them insignificant? So that is something I do wonder, like when you are running Zips projections, is there, the Zips tell you at all, Dan, like what would be the ideal lineup for the Chicago White Sox?
I usually have to ask it. I don't expect there's any big changes simply because I think the White Sox probably right now would get the best lineup on the field on the field. They're just not deep enough to have options at a lot of positions, if that makes sense in a cruel way. Generally,
it does. Like one area is what to do at the corners with Lenin Sosa and Miguel Vargas, because Lenin's so bad on defense that you can't play him at second base anymore. And he has brain farts at first, but he led the team in home runs and was one of the better hitters for the White Sox in 2025. Vargas seems to be better defensively at first base, but who do you play at third base right now for the White Sox if it's not Sosa? But if you need Sosa's bat in the lineup, do you just move Vargas over to third? Like, I think that's the question that's been swirling in White Sox fans' minds. And exactly, like, that's one area. Like, what would Zips recommend the White Sox do between those two players?
What I would expect Zips to say, I'd have to, like, run the whole team over again and see. But I think probably if you're just talking about winning right now, and it might be a better idea, is to play Vargas at first, Sosa as a part-time DH. Benintendi can take the at-bats against righties. Put Curtis Meade at third base just to see if he can hack it at third. I'm not sure he can, but I think that's something that you have to see. And if you're willing to see if Vargas can hack it at third, you might as well be willing to see if Meade can, because Meade has simply more upside left at this point in his career than Vargas does. So I'd probably go with that. Antonacci in AAA. I don't think that's what the White Sox are going to do, but that's what I would do. But they haven't asked me, so it probably has no authority over them.
They've had more than 60 players the last 2 years be featured in games, and I'm sure that's going to be the case in 2026. There'll be a lot of shuffling. But Zach, thank you so much for your question. And finally, Dan, the last question I have for you. After running the Zips projections with the current 40-man roster for the White Sox, is this team closer to not losing 100 games?
Oh, yeah. The default projection, very early, since I haven't actually projected all the teams, it looks kind of in that 93 to 96 win territory. So that actually puts at least...
You mean based loss, 93-96 loss team?
Oh, did I say wins? I did not.
You did.
Oh, I maybe over the next year and like 2 months... But it's Zip special 8-month projection. They probably look like they won't lose 100 games if a lot of things don't go wrong. So I would actually, if you held a gun to my head and said, "Dan, are they going to lose 100 games?" I'd probably actually say no. And
All right.
I feel I mean, a little scared to have the White Sox have my health and safety in their hands this way, but that's how I would pick.
All right. Well, there you go. Progress continuing. And again, the White Sox have a lot of work to do still in this offseason. And when they do make those big moves, if they do make any big moves, we'll always invite Dan on to get an understanding of how it impacts the White Sox roster from both a baseball analyst standpoint and what Zips thinks as well for those moves. But you can follow Dan on Twitter. He's at D Zimborski. He's also over on Blue Sky. He's at dzimborski.fangraphs.com. All of the excellent writers for Fangraphs are over on Blue Sky these days. You can read his excellent work on fangraphs.com. And Dan, as always, thank you again for coming on the show and sharing your insight with the 2026 Zips. And I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Always fun, Josh. You do the same.
Now joining me on the Sox Machine podcast is Sox Machine's beat reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. A bit of White Sox news to start. First reported by the Dominican Republic news outlet, Diario Libre, current manager of Gigantes de Cibao, Jose Lejer will be the next White Sox first base coach. James Fegan, what should we know about Lejer?
He's been in the Cardinal system for a while now. I want to say probably around a decade. Before that, he was a minor league manager for the Mets for a while. He's done a lot of Dominican Winter League coaching prior to the Gigantes managerial job that he has this year or this winter. But I want to say it's like between those and Mets, it's over a decade of minor league managerial experience. Spent 4 years most recently with Double A Springfield, managing them for St. Louis. He got manager of the year in 2024, and Baseball America named him like a managerial prospect in the past. Not someone I recall hearing like a ton about. It's more like it seems more like the type of polling of like what minor league manager is pretty good type of response than, you know, someone we've heard bandied about a lot, but obviously he's been managing a great deal. But he did shift to a field and base running coordinator role with the Cardinals last year, and had done like specifically like focus on player development in the DR at their academy for a few years before they shifted into managing as well. So when you're talking about replacing Jason Bourgeois, who ran outfield defense and base running for the White Sox, he would have the competencies to do that. They haven't really like given full details or, you know, elaborated on whether it's like a straight one for one kind of replacement of, or if he'd have different responsibilities. He did catch a little bit in the minor leagues as a player, but I don't know. It seems like that'd probably still be Walker McKibben's role. I thought it's notable, like, I know I'm, because people do it to me as much as anyone, I don't know like the specific ethnic or cultural backgrounds of every member of the White Sox coaching staff, but kind of filling a void of having a Latino, a prominent like Latino coach on staff, or someone with a ton of like experience with developing Latino players on the staff up to this point with his current composition. So he kind of fills a little bit of a gap they had there in some respects. But yeah, he seems more than qualified for a first base coach job. You know, coming from an organization that obviously has waned a little bit in their player development reputation, you know, the top tier player development reputation they had, you know, probably in the mid 2000s, but obviously was a decorated part of that. So from what the traction we got on social today, because I don't know how many like English language media talked about it beforehand, clearly not like incredible magnitude or response from White Sox fan base. So it's like it's not a huge hire who the first base coach is, but he seems like, you know, the credentials are pretty up there for, you know, this type of gig.
Yeah, it's first base coach, right?
Right.
First base coach guys are not usually that popular. I mean, Tim Raines maybe, just
They're usually more
because.
popular than the third base coaches, for what it's worth.
Well, yeah, probably. especially for sending runners home. Probably more on the goodwill side. But it's another new face to the White Sox clubhouse, Jim, and it kind of start. This is like a theme here where I don't know how much like promoting within has happened since Chris Getz has taken over. It is another new face that has joined the Chicago White Sox, and it's really getting down to Chris Getz and what, Justin Gerschle as the holdovers for the Chicago White Sox?
Yeah, I guess pretty close to that. You know, this is a kind of role, you know, even if you get down to, adding a Spanish-speaking coach into the mix is like, you know, this might be a way for a guy like Guillermo Quiroz, who's last seen managing the Birmingham Barons, like this would be the last sign of like matriculating up the ladder into a major league coaching staff. So, you know, if they wanted to promote from within or reward from within, you know, hiring a AA championship manager certainly seems like a fair deal. So the fact that they continue to look beyond any kind of natural ties to Will Venable or Chris Getz, you know, you're not drawing any obvious connections. It does underscore the whole no stone unturned process with these coaching staff. You know, I'm trying to think of like coaching, you know, first base coaches that really resonated. I'm thinking like with the Royals, Rusty Koontz was there for years, and he was like a very effervescent personality guy with great hair. You know, somebody who was made for, you know, easy sound clips for, you know, the Royals broadcast and such. But so it is a case where it can be somebody who's just like a good vibes guy being the first base coach, and you can more or less get away with that. So I am curious when they fill out the staff and when you look at, you know, whether they replace the offensive coordinator or the catching coordinator or what kind of role shift, you know, how they explain how he fits in and what kind of ambitions they have for it, because it does seem like, you know, it's not just we need to reward a guy because he's going to get picked off by some other organization. We like to have him around. This is looking for somebody else. And so that would seem to point to some kind of purpose, and let's see what that purpose is.
I would note Getz did have like a straight comment at GM meetings where he said like one of his goals was to hire outside of the organization. It's not quite like they seemingly have a bias to hire outside the organization rather than within, but that's clearly like something, like I think it was an out-of-town reporter who asked him about it that led to it, because it's just like a quick rundown of like the rebuild, and like that's something he stated as part of the goals, which I thought, you know, doesn't sound surprising, but that he would define it as like a central part of like his approach stuck out, especially, you know, now as the coaching staff comes together.
Yeah, it was one of my first observations, just like looking at the White Sox clubhouse, looking at the White Sox front office. I don't know what Justin Gerschle's contract is like. I don't know if it expires after this season and if the White Sox continue to really tear down the foundation. But if that is the ultimate goal for Chris Getz, I'd be a little nervous for anyone that was ever hired by Rick Hahn or Kenny Williams. You may be replaced soon. I don't know if it's deliberate.
To counter that, they did promote him to the major league staff. So I think the advancement that, like, you know, minor league coaches they didn't think super highly of, he's already gotten.
Right, right. So if Gerschle did leave, he can get another job in the majors. It's just that with LeHair's resume, it's more extensive than Sergio Santos, but you could have brought in Santos if you wanted to promote within. But with the specifics that you mentioned, James, that they're looking to improve upon, LeHair has that example. He has that expertise and that resume working within the St. Louis Cardinals system. He has been a longtime minor league manager as well. So he deserves, as far as this opportunity to coach in the majors. So I look forward to hearing more from him. He's well-spoken. You can look at news clips from Springfield, Missouri, as he coached the Springfield Cardinals, did a lot of interviews, a lot of media down there. So I'm interested to learn more about what LeHair will bring to the Chicago White Sox coaching staff. But there you go. The White Sox now have a first base coach.
He's a minor league manager of Tim Tebow. So he's media trained. I would
oh my gosh. Really?
Yeah. 2017.
Oh,
it's like Terry Francona with Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I'd love to hear stories about that. I did not know that. So that's the, oh man, that's a great nugget of information, James. Continuing on, we just had Dan Zaborski, Jim, talk about the 2026 Chicago White Sox Zips projections. And you wrote up some of your reactions well on SoxMachine.com. So podcast listeners, if you didn't get a chance to read Jim's column, you can certainly do that on the website. But Jim, what was your one big takeaway after reviewing the 2026 projections?
It's not as bad as I thought, considering that he's issuing these projections before the White Sox have made a move of consequence. They've turned over a lot of the bottom quarter of the 40-man roster. You know, they've traded some pitching depth away. They've tried to acquire some infield depth or some outfield depth, some position player depth, but nobody they're guaranteeing jobs to. It's still pretty wide open. They need outfielders. They need starting pitching depth. So if you told me that like this is like the bare bones roster, I would probably think it would be considered way worse than the 2025 edition after signing Martin Perez, after signing Mike Tauchman and Austin Slater. And not really. I mean, like there, there are some positions that are worse, but because of some growth from like Wilson Montgomery, Kyle Teal, et cetera, there are some positions that are better, like Shane Smith being found money. That really helps out a lot in terms of like the top five starting pitchers. The bullpen still shaky, but with Grant Taylor projecting well, like he helps out a lot. So you can see like the skeleton of a team that's decent. They just have a lot of work to do to fill it in and to give the skeleton like a circulation system and other things needed to live. But I was pleasantly surprised by like, oh, this is, and this is the scar tissue of covering the White Sox is like, you've seen far worse. And that can also be, you have to guard against that being like, oh, this isn't that bad. We have 2024 and 2025. And that only goes so far. And I think like, this is the last year of it meaning anything. And should it be like a fourth consecutive 100 loss season? Like, there will, there's always people calling for heads, but like, this will be pretty much indefensible when it comes to just how much of a runway they've had to show some kind of material improvements in wins and losses. And when you get to the before move stage of the roster, which is what we're looking at right now, they can work with this to some extent, and we'll see what they do.
Yeah, and they have 34 guys on the 40-man roster, so the White Sox will be adding to their roster shortly. James, was there anything that caught your attention when looking over the Zips projections for the White Sox?
I mean, I would be cheating to say Sam Antonacci, since that's later in our rundown.
That's fine. You can go ahead, cheat. Bring him up.
I mean, they kind of project him for what the White Sox would like him to be, which is like someone who enters into their infield mix and gets on base, provides them a left-handed stick, and maybe doesn't actually play shortstop in the major league level, but provides them probably a little bit more versatility than some of like the first or third only guys, or what Lenin's status is right now defensively. So I think that's the archetype they hope his season follows. I'd love if he actually slugged 500 instead of 340 or whatever it has him at, but I think that's what they would hope his profile would do, at least upon initial arrival.
Yeah, Zips loves Sam Antonacci. I asked Jim Callis about Sam Antonacci in our previous episode. Jim, lots of Sam Antonacci love on the podcast in these last two episodes, way more than I was planning on, as I feel like I'm ill-prepared because I don't know a whole lot about Sam Antonacci's game. But the more I hear about him and what Callis reported, and even from Callis's eyes and his scouting down in Arizona, watching Antonacci play in the Arizona Fall League. And now we see Zips, one of the best projecting models when it comes to Major League Baseball, being really high on Antonacci as far as the near future. Is it too soon to make plans for Sam Antonacci to be part of the 2026 Chicago White Sox?
I'm of two minds about it, which I think is always my cop-out answer, that I can see things being two ways, but he is I think both a unique presence and somebody we've seen before. Like, I think my cautionary tale for him would be Nick Madrigal, not in terms of, or I guess in terms of power, but in terms of like somebody who gets a lot out of his motor in low A and double A. And as soon as you get to triple A, especially definitely the major leagues, and your aggression and your willingness to take the extra base or the advantages you see, you know, it's either there are fewer mistakes to take advantage of, defenses are more ready for you. 90 feet is longer against major league defenses than it is against minor league defenses. That was the problem with Madrigal. I think he just got a lot out of his motor at college and the minors. And then we got to the majors, just it wasn't that special. You know, maybe some injury sapped some of his speed to where he went from being plus to average, but he thought he was plus, and so he ran into a lot of mistakes just thinking he could get there. And with Antonacci being somebody who steals a lot of bases without being a plus runner and being somebody who is just, you know, hard nose is underselling it when it comes to just how he describes his game and how he, you know, runs the bases, how he plays defense, how he talks about it. He talks about baseball in a very scary way in terms of like single-minded devotion. So like I could see him going to the majors and just running into a wall, be like, no, you got to hit for more power before you can bring this stuff in here, because you cannot just run real hard and scare defenses about it with the speed that you have. On the other hand, I could see him being the kind of prospect to where like his game is so defined and his mentality is so strong that you could probably give him a major league audition. And if it goes poorly, it won't break him, because like, he's not somebody who's trying to be something he's not. I think he's somebody, if he goes to the majors and he's like, if it doesn't work, he might go to the minors and try to like, okay, how do I address this, versus somebody like who freaks out about it just because, you know, his swing is simple. It's not like he's swinging from his shoes. He's not like he's, you know, striking out at a 28% rate in AAA and you hope it stays there at the major league level. Like, he knows what he is. It's just a matter of is what he is. Does that work in the major leagues? I'm skeptical, but you know, should it get to the point where he needs somebody to play second base and has a 400 OBP at AAA? Sure. I think no matter what stage of the season, probably can get away with trying him out. And it's not like, you know, he doesn't seem delicate, I'll put it that way, in terms of like his composition as a prospect. And so you can throw him against the wall. If it hits him with a thud, he'll probably get back up and try again. So I think that's where I'm at with, I don't have the highest of hopes for him to succeed initially, but I'm also not afraid if like he's showing out and nobody else is, sure, reward him, see what happens.
He's a man who said, if you duck a slider at your knees while you're behind in the count, I don't think you really want to win.
Who is? I'm blanking, or I'm struggling to think of the name in the World Series. Who got out of the way of that pitch that would have...
Like this year?
Yeah, this year.
Was it Andrés Giménez?
No, I'm blanking. Terang?
For Bryce Terang from Milwaukee?
Was it Bryce Terang? Or no, I'm trying to think in the postseason. I'm trying to think of a postseason moment.
Okay.
I was going to bother. I'll look it
so
up.
So you're
I'll
saying Antonacci would here, but yeah. Deliberately stick their elbow out and take that pitch.
Kneecap.
He said he would duck something. Though it makes me now wonder like what he's thinking every time like a teammate does something like that.
Is it too soon, James? I mean, should Chase Weidroth be sweating, or should any of these out of options guys should be sweating?
Chase Weidroth should not be sweating because he's their backup shortstop. So he always has utility on the roster, and he's probably looking at more like platooning. Like, I think Chase Weidroth would be sweating in the sense that like, I think he wants to be like a 700 plate appearance guy who like plays through everything. And, you know, he's sweating in the sense of like he sees this mirror of himself, and like they can't give them both like 800 plate appearances a year at the same time. But I think he has a role on White Sox teams until we find out otherwise. I don't think it's threatened by Antonacci. I think they could wind up sharing. The idea is that they'd be a more productive whole together than, you know, both not being able to put platoon matchup on them, and also the level to which Chase kind of played through things last year that maybe you IL him for if you like Antonacci's just the left-handed version
Got
of him
it.
already on the
Okay.
roster.
So we're still right now in the off season, planning to talk about in February spring training. How are you going to divvy up playing time between Miguel Vargas, Lenin Sosa, and Curtis Meade? And Sam Antonacci will get what? Another chance in Birmingham? Do you call him up to Charlotte?
I would
That'd
imagine.
be.
I mean, he's got a good chunk of time, and he played AFL. I think, especially if you think he had a good spring training, and you seriously considered him for the roster. I think Charlotte's not an unreasonable ask for him. It's not like it's a bad offensive environment. So, yeah, I would think so.
Okay, so Tanner Murray, Sam Antonacci, a couple guys to watch for
I
with
mean, he
Charlotte.
had a 430 OBP in Birmingham, and like that's not where his power stroke is going to come alive. So I don't know what you're looking for him to accomplish if you go back there, other than win a third Southern League title, which I'm sure he'd be hyped about. But
Was Terang, by the way. I was picturing it in the World Series because it mattered a lot at the time, and then the way the Brewers played like kind of faded from memory. So I had it having a much bigger impact on the series
got
than it
it.
actually had.
Got it. Well, again, the last couple episodes, lots of Sam Antonacci love. I was not prepared for that, but someone to keep in mind, podcast listeners, especially in February when we're watching spring training games. We'll see from the White Sox who makes it to the World Baseball Classic. There are more names that are being added to the WBC. It shouldn't be a lot of White Sox players, but who knows? If Antonacci tears up spring training, maybe we see him at some point in 2026 for the White Sox. Probably not on opening day, as James mentioned, but at some point this upcoming season, because as we've learned the last couple of years for this rebuild edition of the Chicago White Sox, more than 60 players are going to play for the White Sox in 2026. And we're going to know them. Damn it. We will continue our one-year streak of knowing all the White Sox players. But with that said, it is currently Tuesday night, and in a couple nights it will be Thanksgiving. And that's how we'll wrap up as far as this episode of the podcast, sharing what we are thankful for this year. And Jim, I'll start with you. For those that are getting a chance to watch on YouTube as I clip this, Jim's got a very festive background. And we're a month away from Christmas. He's got a big Christmas tree behind him. So, Jim Margulis, what are you thankful for this year?
Yeah, I got the holiday wrong. Sorry about that. I'll scrap my backdrop, put it in storage, refilm this. No, I'm currently in the southwest suburbs. First time home for Thanksgiving in God knows how long, like 20 years. So thankful for
Wow.
that. That'll be nice. And of course, it's the year that there's a snowstorm predicted for Saturday. So I had to cut my trip short probably and head back on Friday. So not here as long as I'd like to be, but yeah, thankful for that. Like whole family's in town, brother, sister-in-law, etc. Seldom in the same place, same time. So that's nice.
No, that is awesome. How about you, James? What are you thankful for this year?
I feel like I thought about this too much, more than I should have, because I read the rundown so early. I am thankful for all Sox Machine supporters. Obviously, we have a very direct, I'm paying your salary type of relationship with pretty much anyone we encounter in the public. Police officers have nothing on us. But I want to say I'm thankful for people who recognize me. I think the internet has made that like there's a level of people you recognize from the internet that you express enthusiasm to meet. That's a much lower tier. That's not actually fame, but we get recognition. I want to say that I'm thankful to people I meet in public who are happy to meet me, even though I sometimes do a poor job of letting my low self-esteem and not feeling like I'm someone you should be excited to meet take the form of seeming judgmental towards the person who is happy to meet me or otherwise uncomfortable with being treated this way. That's my fault. That's you shouldn't feel bad. I hope that I show proper gratitude towards the people who are happy to meet me and introduce themselves in public. Recently there's like a new restaurant that opened near my wife's job, and we thought we'd go check it out afterwards, after I picked her up from work. And as we were finishing up our meal, there was a guy at the next table with his wife, who was clearly like waiting for me to like leave or like to not interrupt my dinner, but like to introduce himself, and he did, and I really appreciated it. And I hope I didn't come off as awkward, but the thing I reacted to was afterwards, the chef of this new restaurant, who's like obviously hoping things are going well and is coming out to like greet the tables, misinterpreted the scene and thought, oh my God, this famous influencer of some kind who has people greeting him has come to dine at my restaurant, and was so thrilled. And I had to like be like, no, that's nothing's happening. We're actually just leaving. Please leave us alone. I
But
don't.
you could have been on the wall. It's Chicago. They could have taken a picture of you, and James Fegan could have been on the
I
wall.
didn't want to come off as ungrateful. I was very appreciated everything about that. When I
White Sox spokesman pose, the
another incident at the Chicago Marathon, I had someone recognize me, and I was very appreciative. And I hope it came up well. It's just that I was with my best friend, who was running the marathon with my buddy Mauricio, and he's right there. And as good guy friends will do, he gave me a bit of crap about it. So he like kind of immediately said like, "Oh, James Fegan, you're so famous." So the first thing this person hears after I say thank you is me turning directly to my side and saying, "Shut the hell up," which might, given the sense that I was embarrassed, and I don't hope that they didn't feel that way. I very appreciate their supporting my work and all of our work. Thank you to all the Sox subscribers. Feel free to approach me in public. Don't feel awkward about it, even if I've given you a preview of how things might go sideways. Very thankful.
You could have been on the restaurant wall. You could have had your photo taken.
That reminds me of like when I was working in Albany and Jim Thome dropped off his 500th home run ball at the Hall of Fame during the season. I was like, oh, I wasn't a sports writer. I worked on the online side, but I told the sports department, like, hey, I'll go cover that story. I'll write up a story because how often does it happen? A guy, a
Yeah.
500 home run hitter dropping off a ball with his dad during the season. Thome is there. He's his usual, joyous self. And so I introduced myself. He's like, hey, Jim, so nice to meet you. And I'm like, no, it isn't. Like, that's my first, like the way he like also like his hand, it's like his handshake is enormous. So it's
Yeah.
just like a vigorous handshake. And he's a close talker. And he's like, so nice to meet you. Like, that's the happiest anybody's ever been to see me. And this guy who's hit a 500th home run, he's dropping the ball. Like, he should be happier about everything else he's doing aside from meeting me. So I can imagine that a little bit.
That's awesome. Well, it sounds like James also has a New Year's resolution. So I am going to take note of that, and we'll revisit that in a month when we share our New Year's resolutions for 2026. But to piggyback off of both Jim and James, I am grateful for you guys as well at Sox Machine. Thank you to everyone that came out to Pittsburgh as far as the road trip, and pretty exciting news. Again, August 7th and August 8th, we're inviting everyone to come to Chicago. Because in February, Sox Machine is turning 20 years old, which is incredible. And it's one of those fun things to do, Jim, to go in the Wayback Machine and see the blog all the way back in 2006. So we're going to be celebrating that weekend. Again, that's August 7th and 8th, 2026. The Chicago White Sox are playing against the Cleveland Guardians. And we're going to be having a tailgate. We're going to be having meetups both at Remova and also Electric Funeral, which has been named one of the top dive bars in Chicago now. They're right next to each other on 35th and Halsted. So if you don't have travel plans, you want to meet up with everybody and celebrate again, mark those dates down, August 7th and 8th. But yeah, I'm excited. We can start hyping this up, Jim. 20 years, man.
Yeah, I'm thankful for that, I suppose. I didn't want to be the only person to say, like, I'm not thankful for our readers. I'm not thankful for subscribers. So let's make that abundantly clear that I am thankful as well. But yeah, 20 years being around, developing an audience, and then like keeping an audience and having an audience still like communicate with you on your platform, like stuff you can't take for granted. And also, like readership, whether it's in person or on the site, providing feedback, reading what you say closely, remembering what you write, and then asking you good questions about it. Like all that is very energizing and rewarding, edifying, etc. to where, like, you know, as long as we've been doing this, like, I'm not burnt out yet because of that, because, you know, we're very lucky to have that kind of community that provides, you know, that kind of level of interest and feedback that I think is very rare.
Yeah, and we get emails all the time. So, like, John Strauss, thank you so much for your wonderful email to us. And that's something, like, to the question part, like, every time I'm done recording with guests, especially like Jim Callis and Dan Zaborski, they always mention that Sox Machine podcast listeners ask the best questions. That very detailed, very thoughtful, very insightful. So everyone is always impressed. It's so funny. The common thing that I hear around Major League Baseball is, man, you guys are great at Sox Machine. I wish the team you covered was better. It's like, yes,
us too.
So do we. But one last thing for me, Major League Baseball, I am thankful for them because they approved our media credentials. So another promo before we sign off, we will be in Orlando, Florida, reporting from the winter meetings. So we got that all squared away. The winter meetings again are December 7th through the 10th. Jim and James will have you guys covered for December 10th, but some big dates that we'll be able to cover. The MLB draft lottery is going to be on Tuesday, December 9th. So we'll be there to figure out which draft pick the Chicago White Sox could have. They have the best odds to get the number one overall pick, but as I wrote on SoxMachine.com a while back, we have still yet to see the team that have the best odds in the MLB draft lottery era actually end up with the number one pick, but they're odds have been in much better favor than the team that has the second best odds, which still has yet to draft in the top five. And that team is currently the Minnesota Twins. And the Rule 5 draft will be on Wednesday, December 10th, but we'll be reporting live from Florida. We'll have a couple of podcasts as well while we're down there. So another programming note, as we enter the Thanksgiving week and things slow down here a little bit for us at Sox Machine, unless there's breaking news for the Chicago White Sox, of course, we'll cover that on SoxMachine.com. But we all hope that you have a wonderful Thanksgiving holiday. Do some shopping online on Black Friday and Cyber Monday. Get those deals, and we'll be returning shortly with a new episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you can subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen to the show and watch our videos on youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. We're on all the social media platforms at Sox Machine. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. We are on Blue Sky at SoxMachine.com. James is at JRFegan.SoxMachine.com. And I am Josh.SoxMachine.com. If you enjoy our work and want full access to all of our coverage of the Chicago White Sox and Major League Baseball, and this would be a good time to do so, especially since we have annual subscriptions and you get a discount off those annual subscriptions, sign up to become a Sox Machine supporter at SoxMachine.com. Monthly and annual subscriptions, as I just mentioned, monthly starts at $5 a month. That gets you the ad-free version of both the podcast and the website. We have additional tiers of support. Again, shout out to Zach Ferguson for joining our Veterans Committee, which is awesome. If you want to be part of the VC, if you want to have direct access to Jim and James in the group chat, again, this would be a good time to sign up because the winter meetings are coming up. If you want to find out the whispers and gossipers and all the fun things that we're hearing on the floor at the winter meetings, yes, gossipers, sign up to be part of our VC at SoxMachine.com. The Sox Machine Podcast is a production of SoxMachine.com. You're on for all things Chicago White Sox baseball and part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. Thanks for listening and watching.